Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. Good show today. We're going to be talking about nutrition, but more specifically, saturated fats. Now, they were kind of banned from our diet a while ago, but there's been new research out, and I've looked at some of it as well. And Brian Moussard, he's a rancher and entrepreneur from Southwest Montana. He's looked at a ton of it himself. He has joined forces now with new U.S. Secretary of Health, that's RFK Jr., on this quest to make America healthy again. And there ain't nothing wrong with that. And Brian, he's the owner and CEO of Reminisce Angus Ranch. He's done his homework, here to discuss why he believes the federal government has missed the mark on the healthy aspects of saturated fats in beef. And that is now a growing audience that are listening and understanding that. Today on Voices of Montana, let's welcome Brian Moussard. He is the owner and operator of Reminisce Angus Ranch with his family in southwestern Montana. Grew up in Dillon, Montana, a distinguished alumnus from Montana Western. He's the founder of Gorgeous Vodka. That was award-winning. The founder of Cattle Bear and Cigars. I have critically acclaimed that. But it's a nationally distributed a cigar product as well. Big West Management does a ton of stuff. And now ranch advisor to RFK Jr., Robert F. Kennedy Jr., our U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services. Good morning, Brian. How you doing, sir?
Good morning, Tom. I'm doing wonderful. How about you?
Hanging in there. Like getting the midweek. You know how that is. And summertime in Montana is a kind of a special time, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
Yep.
June and September. My two favorite months.
Yeah. You just got done calving, too. How'd that go? Or maybe you're not done yet.
No, we just started calving.
Yeah.
We're a lot different. We push way back. We sell older bulls, and so we just pushed our calving back. We start really around Memorial Day, and it's a great time. It's busy. I mean, we're irrigating. We're prepping lots of things. We're shipping cattle, AIing cattle in our feedlot, and running our beef business full on, and it's the calving part is kind of a vacation for Marcy and I. We just go up in the mountains with the cows and do our thing.
That's nice, and you're not huddled around a lean-to against a 40-mile-an-hour wind in the wrong temperatures, too. Let's thanks for being here. This is a topic that I've heard you talk about, and I appreciate that too, because you're kind of bucking a trend a little bit. But there's some new evidence regarding saturated fats, and I want to have you tell a story, Brian, from kind of like the beginning to end a little bit. You've served previously as the former president of the Montana Stock Growers Association, 2017, 2018, and a lifelong rancher too. When did you start examining some of the evidence regarding saturated fats and then, you know, the things that led the U.S. government to declaring it unhealthy in our diet?
Well, I think, you know, I wanted to be in the cow business so bad when I was little. My parents co-signed on a loan when I was 10. I borrowed $400 and bought my first cow in 1978. And I think the outcome was supposed to be, okay, we know this kid is doomed. We've got to get him out of the cow business. Let's show him how bad it is. And it didn't work. It backfired. I've been infatuated with cows my whole life. And growing up in the 80s, you know, when I was in junior high, I was paying 18% interest, 20% interest with all the farmers and ranchers. And just watching, you know, I went through junior high and high school, and we got out of high school, and all of the parents, all of our friends were being exported. Families, kids were being exported off of the ranches in Montana. And, you know, we were told, go get a job, go to college, get a degree. At least you can get paid. You can have a job if you have a degree. Go do something useful. Go on a mission if you want to. But you have to leave here. There's no money for you. There's not enough here at the table, basically. And that wasn't just our family. That was lots. That was across America. And there was just a curiosity within me of why. Why? I know ranching is hard work. I know farming is hard work. But why is there no money there? Why do people have to leave? Why are wives having to go to town and get a job? Why are hired men getting let go and the government's able to pay more money? Why can't agriculture, you know, it's It's the earth. It's what we grow. It's what we feed. It's our nutrition. What is wrong? And so I didn't know anything about it. I just had this curiosity inside. So when I got out of high school, I went to college. I did what my parents said. We had to pay our own way. We got a degree, business degree. So I thought, okay, fine. If the wheels fall off this thing, I can get a job somewhere. I got my degree. I did what I was told. And I started a business my senior year of college. And it was a bull test, and we sold bulls. And so I got to really go out and meet a lot of ranchers. You know, we had 40, 50 ranchers from all over the country that would bring us bulls. We turned it into an all Montana bull test after 4 years. But the conversations were the same. In 1991, when I had my first sale, over half my customers had 100 cows or less. And everybody had chickens. Everybody had a few hogs. There were several people that were milking a few cows. There were small dairies everywhere, small feeders everywhere, small packing houses everywhere. And within 5 years, by 1996, those small farms and ranches, those 100-head outfits were gone. And by 2000, the 250-head outfits had most of their family exported, working other jobs. They were doing their cattle work on weekends when they had friends that could come and help. All the really good employees got hired by state, local, and federal governments because they had insurance, they had retirement, they had all these things. And again, that curiosity in me of why, what is going on? I got immersed into the stock growers in 1992. I've been involved with them ever since. I met with some of the founders of RCAF. I got involved with NCBA. And for 30 years, I really felt like I was the only guy that didn't understand what was going on. You know, there was all the discussions where, I mean, it's been a beer commercial, Tom, for 30 years. Tastes great, or less filling. And, you know, the Packers are bad. Let's sue them. No, they're good. We need them. The beef checkoff is doing a terrible job. No, it's doing a good job. We got to promote our product. But it was basically tastes great or less filling for 30 years. And I just thought I was the only one in the room that didn't get it. I just didn't understand it. And everybody was so sure of themselves. I was just wondering, why don't I understand this? So I kept pursuing that. We did everything we could to add value. And I kept watching larger, you know, those medium-sized places go away. These families kept going away. Small dairies were going away. People weren't milking cows anymore. And so I kept pursuing it. I still didn't get it until I got into the meat business because I thought, okay, I've tried everything. I've hit the glass ceiling. I've tried to help our customers with added value in genetics, health, and nutrition. Still wasn't enough. There was a couple of good years. There was one break-even year, and then there's 7 years of major loss in this industry. And I thought, okay, I'll jump into the beef business. If Packers are where all the money's at, I can get into that business. I'll be motivated to pull added value back to our customers because I need them as selling them bulls or feeding cattle for them. I have to help them. So I got involved in the meat business, and boy, you talk about drinking through a fire hose and learning. What I had thought we had figured out as an industry wasn't even close. Not even close. I learned for the first time that our own beef council is not allowed to mention the word fat. And I couldn't. And so I dove into that to find out why. And our beef council, and I think the dairy is the same way, I'm not sure, but you never hear the dairy or whole milk going, you know, drink your whole milk, drink your half and half, drink your cream because it's full of fat and it's good for you. You never see an ad from the beef council that says anything but eat lean beef. This is what 3 ounces of lean beef will do, and it's always the vitamins and the minerals, and it's a picture of lean beef. Yet all of us, when we go out to eat meat, we go get prime, we get high choice, we want the marbling, it tastes better. But the conversation within our industry, I talk to our feeders, our processors, our retailers, and everybody, the conversation was, well, I probably shouldn't eat that. There's a heart attack on a bun when you talk about bacon and brisket and burger and that fear, that heart attack. And so I kept diving in more and learning more, and I ran across Nina Teicholz, who wrote the book, The Big Fat Surprise, she was a 25-year vegetarian, 25 years. And she came across the scam because she got assigned to, she was working for Gourmet Magazine. She got assigned to trans fats. 10 years later, she uncovered the biggest health scam in the United States that has affected the entire world. And that is, not one time has saturated fat ever been proven through any trial to cause heart disease. And yet a fraudulent trial done in 1958 by Ansel Keys at the University of Minnesota, who used seven countries to prove that the more cholesterol you ate, the higher your risk of heart disease was. He presented that to the American Heart Association. They went with it. They said, okay, this looks good. It was pretty simple. They published the data. The American Heart Association in 1961 says avoid saturated fat. And then what she had uncovered was they had access from 22 countries to the exact same data. He cherry-picked seven countries to make it look good and drive his point across. The American Heart Association received $1 million at the same time from Procter & Gamble. Procter & Gamble are the makers of Crisco. That's a seed oil. That's in 1911, there wasn't a single case of heart disease in America. 1912, and Crisco came out in 1911. They were using seed oils as a lubricant to replace whale fat in ships. That's what it's for. An engine can break it down, but our human body cannot. And so heart disease started going through the roof. And by 1955, President Eisenhower has his heart attack. Procter & Gamble knows exactly what is going on. There was no data, but the rise of seed oils and the decrease of saturated fats in our diet was without anybody. You don't have to go to college. You don't have to do a test. It was just blatant. So they ran another test in 1973 to 1977, again at the University of Minnesota, basically to validate the heart health hypothesis. This was the study they used to the Heart Association. It was the biggest study, most accurate study ever done in the world. They had 9,000 people in mental institutes in Minnesota. So they could control their diet. They split them up, and they did it for 5 years. They put people, half of them went on a high-fat diet. They could eat as much saturated fat as they want. The other ones they put on a low-fat diet. And the results were so astonishing, they didn't publish them.
Wow.
Because it didn't validate that. What it showed is the people on the low-fat diet had a higher rate of mortality across the board. And the people on the high-fat diet were healthy. And so that data didn't get published until about 13 years later, when pressure, people kept saying, what happened to this study? And the guy, the researcher's son or his grandson or nephew or something, had to actually go into the basement. They pulled it up. They got a hold of the researcher and they said, why didn't you publish this data? And he said, well, it didn't match our narrative. We weren't happy with the outcome. So they published it in some European, small European medical journal in the back of it, buried it, and marched with their narrative. By then, seed oils are on the rise, processed sugars on the rise. There's a ton of money in those two things, and they already had saturated fat as a culprit. And remember, saturated fat just isn't in beef. It's in eggs, cheese, milk, hogs, bacon, and beef. And so as I got to learning, It for the first time, it clicked with me going, hey, wait a minute. This is what happened to all the small farms and ranches. This is what happened to all the small packers, all the small feeders. 1980 rolls along. The USDA signs on to this lie, and they define saturated fat as unhealthy. You look at their trajectory of animal agriculture in America from 1980 to 2025, and it is almost straight down. I mean, it's a plane on fire. You look at chronic illness, and it's going straight up. And that is the first click with me going, this is what happened to rural America. This is why our one-room schoolhouses are gone. This is why our little post offices are gone. The FSA offices are gone. And we as an industry have been trying to fight over the scraps. We've been trying to, our every one of our conversations is over the symptoms, not the source.
Brian,
that's why we've never gotten anywhere.
Thank you for that. I mean, I didn't want to interrupt you because that's the background, and it's important to lay that down too, because now we're going to take a look at going forward here, because you've been asked by RFK Jr., who's our Secretary of Health and Human Services, to be his ranch advisor, and the book is open now, I think our eyes are uncovered about a lot of things that we could possibly be misled on. I want to get to the pros and cons of saturated fat. I want to get to the link between nutrition policy and the future of American agriculture as well. And we'll do that when we come on back with more. It's Brian Moussard, again, an entrepreneur and a longtime Reminisce Angus Ranch with family in the Southwest Montana area. Gorgeous vodka, Cattle Baron cigars, a lot of successful businesses, and now ranch advisor to RFK Jr. So more here on Voices of Montana with Brian Moussard. I'm Tom Schultz. Thank you guys for being here. Brian owns and operates the Reminisce Angus Ranch there, Big West Management, the founder of Gorgeous Vodka, award-winning founder of Cattle Baron Cigars. Brian, we could talk a ton about those things as well, but we're keeping focused here. He's now the new ranch advisor to Montana's Secretary of Health and Human Services, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., RFK. And that's probably going to take a little bit of time kind of down the road. Thanks for talking about saturated fats and maybe those misconceptions, how you came to understand those misconceptions. Let's talk about them. You know, what are the pros and cons about saturated fats? And then really, how do we link this back to better nutrition and how does it help our egg community?
Well, I think as far as pros and cons, it was really important to lay out the history of where we're at. And I just got done doing another radio deal on the MAHA movement and saturated fat. And our entire bodies depend on saturated fat. Our brain is 95% cholesterol. And when you don't feed your brain cholesterol, it goes haywire. And you look at diabetes, obesity, just take those two things. When you eat saturated fat, it satiates your body because saturated fat is energy. Your body burns it as a carbohydrate. It converts that to a carbohydrate. And so we were talking earlier on another radio show that the guy was asking, when are people going to say enough's enough? The price of beef is too high. And I said, beef isn't any more expensive than anything else when you look at what you get out of it. When you buy cheap food, and I'm staying with saturated fat here, when you replace saturated fat with cheap food, you go look at the meat or you worry about high dollar eggs or high dollar milk, and you go buy cheap stuff. You go buy the cheap ice cream with 22 ingredients instead of 6. You buy chips, you buy fake cheese, cheap cheese filled with carbohydrates. A couple things happen. One, people tend to buy more if it's cheaper. So if they need one, they may buy 3, they may buy 4 because it's cheap. Hey, no big deal. Then they may eat all 4 of them because their body is saying, I'm still hungry. Please feed me. Please buy more. And if you would just buy real food, whether it's eggs and cream and half and whole milk, buy beef, buy chicken with skin on it. I'm not a paid spokesman for these other industries, but saturated fat in the long run is cheaper for your health. It'll replace prescriptions. It'll replace all those filler foods because your body will convert it, and your body absolutely has to have it to even function. And so that's what's good about saturated fat. It has never caused heart disease ever since the beginning of man.
Well, and also vitamins A, D, E, it is full of those vitamins as well. When you're battling this, and I got 4 minutes left here, and we'll circle back to it too, but when you're battling I guess the deep state, so to speak. What do you hope to accomplish? What do you think that this MAHA movement? What's a good outcome here, Brian? And how do you get there?
I can only share a little bit, but I can tell you the new dietary guidelines are coming out, and they are going to be much, much better. Bobby asked me last summer in an email, he said, please educate me on saturated fat so I can get into my talking points. And I have sent him so much information. I introduced him to Nina Tye Schultz. So I know that she is in there working on things. So that basically is the best outcome we can have in the last 45 years. If we get the USDA to remove the cap on saturated fat, get them to remove the cap on red meat in our diets, then we can unleash the Beef Council. They can actually talk about the health benefits of it. So that's what's coming. That's what's good. That's basically what the work that I've been doing as is. I'm not interested in my kids and my grandkids and their livelihoods. I really have to take care of our customers and their families. We take care of the most people we can take care of, then our family will be fine. And so that's what we have to do as an industry, is what's really going to propel us. And changing those dietary guidelines, getting those caps off of saturated fat and red meat, which I know is coming. I cannot share a lot right now. I know it's coming. We had an email this morning. It's very exciting. That'll be the biggest thing that's happened to our industry and even really all these other animal industries in 45 years.
Yeah. I got a couple of minutes here. What do you think that will do for American agriculture?
Well, for American agriculture, as I said earlier, in 1980, the value of our product permanently dropped below the cost of production. That can turn it around, because then the information to doctors and to schools and to dietitians of getting that back in to our diets, that's going to increase the value. And it may not increase the value a whole lot, but it'll bring stability to our markets. We won't have these huge crashes because our public is finally going to be eating real food. And saturated fat is real food. Our bodies only require two essential nutrients. One is protein and one is fat. Now, carbohydrate is an essential nutrient, but it's not required because your body turns saturated fat into carbohydrates. We get that message out there. That brings stability to our industry.
Ranchers now turn nutritionists, right? I mean, I think that's a natural thing. I think that's a good thing. That helps sell a product. I got less than a minute, Brian. Is there anything you want to kind of wrap up with? I love that we'll be having some new guidelines. That's big news upcoming. What do you got for final thoughts?
Well, I think for people to be hopeful, you know, I have a lot of conversations with ranchers right now, and everybody's asking me, how long is it going to last? How long is it going to last? Because they're used to the crash coming. And we get this across the finish line. There is no crash coming. We get some other, there's a lot of other management things that we're working on with RFK, but there's some things happening that are going to happen in the next year that are going to put some foundation blocks in our financial well-being moving forward for a long time.
And I think the good news is that people are more receptive now to this as well, opening their eyes, really searching for truth. And nutrition is a big part of that. Brian Moussard, you've taken on quite a bit. I'm out of time here. I just want to say thank you. I look forward to chatting with you down the road too, all right? And then maybe lifting up some gorgeous vodka with you. How's that sound?
That sounds good. Our next interview should be in the cigar lounge, having a cigar and a sip of vodka, and we'll talk about other things ranching.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast, and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.